Reading this morning from Chaitanya Charitamrita. Madhyalila chapter 22, text, I don't know, 40? 41. Okay. The chapter is entitled The Process of Devotional Service. Well, I'm going to read the text 40. It's because it's also part of the flow. This is a quote from Canto 5. Chapter 19 of Srimad Bhagavatam. Whenever Krishna is requested to fulfill one's desires, he undoubtedly does so, but he does not award anything which, after being enjoyed, will cause one to petition him again and again to fulfill further desires. When one has other desires, but engages in the Lord's service, Krishna forcibly gives one shelter at his lotus feet, where he will forget all other desires. Text 41. When someone engages in Lord Krishna's devotional service for satisfaction of the senses, and instead acquires a taste for serving Krishna, he gives up his material desires and willingly offers himself as an eternal servant of Krishna. Here's a quote from Hari Bhakti Sudodaya. When he was being blessed by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Dhruva Maharaj said, "Oh my Lord, because I was seeking an opulent material position, I was performing severe types of penance and austerity. Now I have gotten you, who are very difficult for the great demigods, saintly persons and kings to attain. I was searching after a piece of glass, but instead I have found a most valuable jewel. Therefore, I am so satisfied that I do not wish to ask for any benediction from you." No purport. Text 43. The conditioned souls are wandering throughout the different planets of the universe, entering various species of life. Samsara Brahmite Kona Bhagyavan Bhagyakina Tar. Sounds familiar, right? The conditioned souls are wandering throughout the different planets of the universe, entering various species of life by good fortune. One of these souls may somehow or other be delivered from the ocean of nescience, just as one of many big logs in a flowing river may by chance reach the bank. Purport. There are unlimited conditioned souls who are bereft of Lord Krishna's service, not knowing how to cross the ocean of nescience. They are scattered by the waves of time and tide. However, some are fortunate to contact devotees, and by this contact they are delivered from the ocean of nescience, just as a log floating down a river accidentally washes upon the bank. Spoken by Akura in the 10th canto, chapter 38, next quote. "Because I am so fallen, I shall never get a chance to see the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This was my false apprehension. Rather, by chance, a person as fallen as I am may get to see the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Although one is being carried away by the waves of the river of time, One may eventually reach the shore. By good fortune, one becomes eligible to cross the ocean of nations, and when one's term of material existence diminishes, one may get an opportunity to associate with pure devotees. By such association, one's attraction to Krishna is awakened. Purport. Srila Bhaktivinod Thakur explains this point. In the Bhagya, or fortune, is this Bhagya, or fortune, the result of an accident, or something else? In the scriptures, devotional service and pious activity are considered fortunate. Pious activities can be divided into three categories. Pious activities that awaken one's dormant Krishna consciousness are called bhakti unmukhi sukriti, or pious activities that bestow material opulence are called bhog unmukhi sukriti, and pious activities that enable the living entity to merge into the existence of the Supreme are called moksha unmukhi sukriti. These last two awards of pious activity are not actually fortunate. Pious activities are fortunate when they help one become Krishna conscious. The good fortune of bhakti unmukhi is attainable only when one comes in contact with a devotee. By association with a devotee, willingly or unwillingly, one advances in devotional service, and thus one's dormant Krishna consciousness is awakened. And some supporting verses. Bhagavatam 10:51-53. Oh my Lord, O infallible person, when a person wandering through the universes becomes eligible for liberation from material existence, he gets an opportunity to associate with devotees. When he associates with devotees, his attraction for you is awakened. You are the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the highest goal of the topmost devotees, and the Lord of the universes. Then Krishna Das Kaviraj writes, not quoting the verse, Krishna is situated in everyone's heart as the Chaitya Guru, the spiritual master within. When he is kind to some fortunate conditioned soul, he personally gives him lessons so he can progress in devotional service, instructing the person as the super soul within and the spiritual master without. Quoting from the Bhagavatam 11th canto, Uddhava Gita. Oh my Lord, transcendental poets and experts in spiritual science could not fully express their indebtedness to you, even if they were endowed with the prolonged life of Brahma. For you appear in two features, externally as the Acharya and internally as the Supersoul, to deliver the embodied living being by directing him how to come to you. By associating with a devotee, one awakens his faith in devotional service to Krishna. Because of devotional service, one's dormant love for Krishna awakens, and thus one's material, conditioned existence comes to an end. Again, Uddhava Gita. Somehow or other, if one is attached, one is attracted to, talks about me, and has faith in the instructions I have set forth in the Bhagavad Gita, and if one is neither falsely detached from material things nor very much attracted to material existence, his dormant love for me will be awakened by devotional service. And this has a nice long purport, so I'll, seems to be like a summary of the others. So I'll read this verse. Text 51. Mahat Kripa Vina Kona Karme Bhakti Naya Krishna Bhakti Dure Rahu Sangsara Nahi Kshaya. Unless one is favored by a pure devotee, one cannot attain the platform of devotional service. To say nothing of Krishna Bhakti, one cannot even be relieved from the bondage of material existence. Purport. Pious activities bring about material opulence, but one cannot acquire devotional service by any amount of material piety, not by giving charity, opening big hospitals and schools, or working philanthropically. Devotional service can be attained only by the mercy of a pure devotee. Without a pure devotee's mercy, one cannot even escape the bondage of material existence. The word mahat in this verse means a pure devotee, as Lord Krishna confirms in Bhagavad Gita 9.13. Mahatmanastamam partha daivim prakritim ashrita bhajantyananyamanaso gyatva bhutadim avyayam. O son of Pritha, those who are not deluded, the great souls, are under the protection of the divine nature. They are fully engaged in devotional service because they know me as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, original and inexhaustible. And final paragraph. One has to associate with such a Mahatma who has accepted Krishna as the supreme source of the entire creation. Without being a Mahatma, one cannot understand Krishna's absolute position. A Mahatma is rare and transcendental, and he is a pure devotee of Lord Krishna. Foolish people consider Krishna a human being, and they consider Lord Krishna's pure devotee, an ordinary human being also. Whatever one may be, one must take shelter at the lotus feet of a devotee Mahatma and treat him as the most exalted well-wisher of all human society. We should take shelter of such a Mahatma and ask for his causeless mercy. Only by his benediction can we be relieved from attachment to the materialistic way of life. When one is thus relieved, he can be engaged in the Lord's transcendental loving service through the mercy of a Mahatma. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is presenting a summary with different scriptural references. Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami is providing them, where the process of devotional service begins. Several things. It's important to make a distinction between, as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was doing, the distinction between material piety and the aspiration for the fruits of material piety and devotional service that's in its pure stage, free from the aspiration of the fruits of material piety. In other words, trying to be an enjoyer of good fortune and opulent life. That kind of an aspiration is materially rooted, and that kind of an aspiration then, because maya, is illusion, and illusion covers the real happiness of the soul, the real purpose of the soul. It obscures one's vision of the goal and obscures one's vision of the personality of Godhead. And it's one of those dilemmas. Life has its dilemmas. How to get out of the material condition of life when you're in it. Krishna outlines that very nicely in the third chapter of Bhagavad Gita, where he indicates whatever it is that you do, the living entity does, in the material field, it's binding upon the living entity. So one might think, I'll just stop doing things. Karma sannyas. But that's not possible, because the soul is active and the soul is going to do something, even if you try to be inactive. And even that inactivity, when one is not in the liberated state, is sinful, because there's duties to be performed according to one's psychophysical nature, one's embodiment. There are duties enjoined by the scripture, and non-performance of duty brings sin. So it's not only bondage, but degradation. So doing nothing is not an option, and doing something is not an option. Because if you do something, you're bound. So what to do? Do nothing, do something, you're in bondage. The modern way of saying that is catch 22, or damned if you do and damned if you don't. So what do? He provides the solution. It's the third chapter of Bhagavad Gita. Solution is yajna. By the performance of yajna, or sacrifice, we discussed this the other evening, what does sacrifice mean? What does sacrifice mean? Where's our... Oh, they're at school. What does sacrifice mean? Do you recall? When you subordinate your interests to the interest of another. Remember that? We covered it twice. So I have an interest. You with me? You're there. I have an interest. We have an interest. So sacrifice means there's another has an interest and I subordinate my interest for their interest. And Prabhupada explained. Everybody does that. Non-devotees do that. Everyone does it. Animals do it. Birds do it. Fish do it. Reptiles do it. Family. Subordinate my interest for the interest of others. For example, or the broader scope. Look at what ants do. They're busy. Or bees, they're busy doing something for the interest of the whole. So it's sacrifice is something that's just part of life. So sacrifice unto Vishnu relieves one from the bondage of work. That's the escape route, the path of liberation. It's not complete in itself, sacrificing unto the benefit of another, but if Vishnu is the object, then at least one can come to the threshold, to the doorway, and then maybe walk through that doorway. So the verse, the previous verse from where we began, is fifth canto verse where Krishna is saying, very well, if somebody comes to me, this is Vishnu or Krishna speaking, if someone comes to me with some material desire they wish to be fulfilled, there's that yajna. They're subordinating their desire, their interest in favor of my interest, but they're not there yet. They still have some interest to be fulfilled. So what does Krishna do? What does Krishna, how does he process that? surely I'll give them. But I'll not give them in such a way that they'll come back to me again and again with the same desire. Rather, if I fulfill that desire, it'll be done in such a way. Instead, they'll have my two lotus feet makes them so satisfied they won't have any further desire. Nice. No further desire. Because the one chief desire is so fulfilling, there's no further desire. So the reference, Hari Bhakti Sudodaya verse, that's one of our verses for today, is the classic. Svamin katar tosmi nitaya yache. I don't desire anything else. The previous verse, kacham. I was desiring something kacha, and I got something more than pakka. I got something, a jewel. Now that I have this jewel, that's your association, I don't want anything. So please, don't ask me for a benediction. We mentioned this yesterday also with in the evening program, that when Akura was asked by Krishna, "My dear Akura, did you see something wonderful in the river Jamuna?" And his reply was, "Seeing you is the greatest wonder and the greatest satisfaction and fulfillment. There can be nothing greater. I'm fully satisfied." Yet, the perfection in Akura's offering prayers to Krishna, that's also mentioned. There was this great humility in Akura's heart. Great humility in Akura's heart. Feeling, I'm not qualified, but the Lord is very merciful. So humility is a necessary component in receiving mercy. Otherwise, who needs it? I'm okay. But overall, the message that Lord Chaitanya is presenting with scriptural references, to come to that position where the desire is awakened for the Lord's mercy, comes through the association of the devotee of the Lord. Shri Shri Radha Madan Mohan Ki Jai. And we find that consistently in the scripture, especially with reference to Bhagavad Purana, because Bhagavad Purana is the history of the lives of great personalities who are devotees of Bhagavan and Bhagavan's reciprocation relationship with them and his exchanges with them. For example, like with Dhruva. Through the mercy of Narada, he achieved the stage of spiritual perfection. Through the mercy of Narada, Prahlad achieved the mercy of the personality of Godhead. Consistently, you won't find an exception. Through the mercy of a great devotee of the Lord, one receives the mercy of Krishna, because that's Krishna's system. He can set up a system whatever he likes. And that's his system. His system is, before approaching him, one must submissively and enthusiastically approach one who is dear to him. And the one who is dear to him, he has given the power of attorney, the license to give Krishna. It's described very nicely in Madhurya Kadambini, the first wave of Madhurya Kandamani, where Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur raises the question, how does bhakti begin? It's very similar to what's here. Bhaktivinoda Thakur's analysis of receiving mercy. And he says, some people say different things. In each of the different things, he then analyzes and says, no, it can't be that one. Because, and he gives the reasons because. So one of those reasons here is some people say, by accumulation of pious activities, one may become a devotee. And the argument against that is, not by the accumulation of any number of material things can one achieve something spiritual. Like a big pile of material piety on top of one another, on top of one another, and eventually it reaches the spiritual sky. Not so. It's not by one's past piety that one attains devotional service. Prabhupada once said, very early in the movement, he said to his American disciples, some of you are thinking that it's due to your past piety that you come to devotional service. And he said, it is not so. He said, rather I found you in some dark place and I grabbed you by the hair and I'm dragging you to Krishna. And your arms and legs are flailing, saying, I don't want to go. I'm dragging you to Krishna. It's not by our past piety that we've come to devotional service. Part of the proof of that is Jagai Madhai, for example, or Magari the hunter, for example, or other examples. Where's the pious activity? Just most sinful personalities. But by the mercy of devotees of the Lord, one can receive the mercy of the Lord. And by receiving the mercy of the Lord through the devotees of the Lord, one's devotional life begins. And it's true for all of us, it's true in Scripture, it's true everywhere, it's ubiquitous, it's all ever-present. We require Krishna's mercy, and that's how we get Krishna's mercy. Not that Krishna is... it's his system, so he can break the system. He can just bestow his mercy upon someone if he so desires. But he likes this system, and it's sensible. If you're going to be close to someone, then you should be very comfortable being in the association of those who are also close to that someone. If you're uncomfortable being close to those who are dear to someone, but you want to be dear to someone, it's a very awkward situation. Very awkward. So, therefore, Krishna's system is you become dear to his devotees. And not automatically you're dear to him. Prabhupada made it really simple. He always did. He gave the example walking in one of those parks that's on the west side of Manhattan. I forget the name of it. But he would see many downtown big people, you know, moneyed people. They'd be out in the morning walking their dog. And he made the comment, you try to make an appointment to see that big person in his office and you won't get an appointment. But you just go to the park in the morning and you see the man walking with his dog. And you walk up to the dog and pat the dog on the head and scratch him under the chin and say, oh, you're cute. And immediately you have a conversation with the big man. Very practical. Similarly, become dear to one who is close to, love me, love my dog. Become close to the Krishna's dog or one who is dear to Krishna. You become dear to Krishna. And not otherwise. Because we don't have the qualification. And Krishna set up the system that way. and it's a natural system. So that's how devotional service begins. In devotional service, as it matures, it's the means of relieving the soul from the bondage of material existence. The bondage of material existence is, very simply, the attraction for fruitive activity, or being stuck in the mode of passion, where our enjoyment consumes our consciousness. We are at the center, the selfishness program. We're at the center, and whatever it is, it's all about what makes me happy. And then making a different project, projects in life so that my happiness is fulfilled. And then there's so many, 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 and there's so many different souls that are trying for their happiness, and there's clashes, and it's a mess called material life. For that reason, those that are frustrated want no personality, impersonal. Then it's smooth and there's no clashes and everything's nice. At least that's the hope or the motivation. But it's not reality, it's not natural, it's not who we are. We're persons. And as persons, we do desire happiness. We just misplaced that desire for happiness in the wrong way, in selfish happiness rather than the happiness of the beloved, the happiness of Krishna. We've lost that principle. It's something like the example that Prabhupada gave, again making it really simple. I just heard him say it in a recorded room conversation yesterday. He was saying, like a long mathematical calculation, so many, 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 many steps in the calculation. But if you get it wrong at the very, very first calculation, all of the other calculations may be right, but the answer is wrong. And they amplify their wrongness or their incorrectness as you go further and further out. He was discussing in a room conversation with someone about, you know, their effort to try to help people. It was a UNESCO person in Geneva, Switzerland. And the man was a little pious, and he was also a little dull. So doing for others is the spirit, the mode of goodness spirit, sacrificing for others, which is, Prabhupada didn't say it in this case, but By working for the material benefit, the piety is piety that's misplaced. Good intention misplaced. Even the path to hell is paved by good intention. So in other words, it's perpetuating. Good intention is simply perpetuating the material disease. If the mistake of understanding who the real self is, the proper identity of who we really are. So how do we get to that position? Even we can read Bhagavad Gita and nod our head and say, yes, I accept. My real identity is spirit soul. Or In the same place in Geneva, Prabhupada was speaking with a nuclear physicist. And Prabhupada was asking the nuclear physicist, do you think that creation of a nuclear bomb is beneficial as a nuclear physicist? And he said, nuclear physicists don't have anything to do with bombs. He described what nuclear physicists do. But then it's how matter organizes itself and makes complexity out of, you know, the building blocks of matter. So if one doesn't understand what's the... So then Prabhupada took it to the point of the soul. Soul generates, or spirit generates matter. Without the presence of the soul, bodies don't develop, or matter doesn't develop into some arrangement. It's random, and order comes from the presence and the touch of spirit. So if we don't have an understanding of that, how are we going to have a solution to nuclear physics? Anyway, whether one is wishing to be a philanthropist or wishing to be a scientist or wishing to achieve something and is really serious about it and isn't just whimsical, there must be some understanding of the actual identity of the animating factor of life. And for that, there must be an understanding of the connection of the individual with the Supreme. And that's not going to happen without the association of one who has that knowledge. So in society, there's necessity for those who have that understanding, or for a body. There has to be a head, for a social body. There has to be those, some, not everyone. Prabhupada was explaining this to the UNESCO individual. There must be some persons who can understand things as they are. So now there's an interest in the legs department, in the belly department, in the arms department. But there has to be proper direction from the head department. Spiritual understanding has to come from one who has spiritual understanding. And then the whole of the social body, an individual or groups of individuals can function properly as the design is intended to function with sufficient spiritual benefit. So this is what Lord Chaitanya is describing in this chapter. How that whole process begins, it begins with the association of a compassionate devotee. Because without all of Madhurya Kandambani's explanation, what Vishwanath Chakrabarti Thakur finally accepts out of the different possibilities of how devotional service begins, it begins through the association of one who's carrying devotion or carrying bhakti in their heart, specifically a Madhyama Bhakta. Krishna gives them the power of tourney and says, you may give me to whoever you like. And then he sets up the rules of to whom you should give. Don't give to those who are, don't cast your pearls before swine. Don't give to persons who will simply make offense and then hurt themselves spiritually. So to those who are innocent, you give. And part of that giving is to know how to, in incremental, little, measured doses, so persons aren't overwhelmed, but give the process of bhakti to others. And that's a lot of what we do. And something that's going to help make us more capable of doing that is, on the other end, are receiving bhakti. And as we receive bhakti nicely, we can more nicely give bhakti. We have to be good receivers of bhakti. That means from, it's not the beginning of devotional service is receiving mercy from a bhakta, like Dhruva wants from Narada or Prahlad wants from Narada, using those same examples. But it's not like, oh, now I receive from Narada and see you later, Narada. It's an ongoing eagerness to be further trained and guided by Narada. It's exactly what Prahlad says to Lord Nrisingadeva. I have one desire. I wish Narada's association more and more. Because in Narada's association, he'll train me how to serve you nicely. It's an ongoing exchange of appreciation for Krishna and how to serve Krishna in the association of Krishna bhaktas. It's ongoing, eternally, even in the spiritual world, eternally ongoing. Nice. We have to get it right at the beginning and then continue getting it right, keeping in mind how devotional service begins. So this is an extensive section, a very important section, and it carries on. Bharat Maharaj is next, speaking to King Rahugana. Process of bhakti. Okay, any discussion? Comments or questions? Okay, thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.